Good morning and welcome to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us on this Christmas Eve. It is the 24th of December. Hopefully everyone had a lovely Hanukkah, the final night last night. Hopefully everybody had a is going to have a lovely Christmas, both tonight and tomorrow, Christmas Eve, and of course tomorrow Christmas. And whatever you celebrate, hopefully you will have some celebration and some joy and happiness in your life. And we're going to try not to screw that up over the next hour and be able to facilitate your happiness.
There's
and
a way
joy.
We can.
Well, we're talking about some grim things, but other than that, I don't think so. I was thinking, you know, originally when I was putting the schedule together last week for today, it seemed as if nobody was going to be that I was going to just be doing the battle by myself, and all my friends have come out to play. I'm so excited. Let me introduce them to you.
Just call us Rudolph.
Daily Rudolph. Freeman, publisher emeritus, Ira Fussfeld is in the house. Good morning, Ira.
Good morning. Very nice to see you all. It's
very
been a
nice
long time
to have you here. It's wonderful to have you, and a very nice surprise. So thank you very much. Rosemary Armeo is back, the wonderful investigative reporter and SUNY Albany journalism professor. Thank you very much for being here.
Love to be here. Yes.
Always nice to have you here. And who's doing duty all week this week is which ends today. It's yes. Libby Post, our wonderful political consultant, who is not only a consultant to politicians, but to me as well. So,
and libraries. Don't forget
that's
libraries.
Right. Libraries and puppy dogs. So,
right.
There you go.
Libraries and cats.
Well, this program has already been a lot more polite than I'm used to.
Well, get ready,
is it the
Ira.
Christmas
yeah.
spirit? Or
get
what?
Ready.
No. No.
All right. So let's start. The big story, of course, is the Food and Drug Administration announced Tuesday that it would scrap a decades-old lifetime prohibition on blood donation by gay and bisexual men, a major stride toward ending that many had seen as a national policy of discrimination. Before we talk about this in depth, and I know, I assume, Libby, you have a lot to say on this, we talked about this when this was suggested that this was the direction that the FDA was going to be going in. And I think I said at the time, which I repeat now, which was, I had no idea they were doing this.
You didn't?
Well, I knew that there was a screening process, but I didn't know that it was a lifetime ban.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was shocked.
It's because it came out in the 80s.
Right. Well, yeah.
And nobody remembers.
Remembers so little of the 80s.
Right.
So this comes. So what do you think the turning point is? At what point did they say, okay, just because there's really no...
Well, part of it is that the incidence of AIDS within the gay male community has been steadily decreasing, although we do see spikes every now and then. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, why aren't they... First of all, there should be no ban whatsoever. Because this idea of, oh, you're gay, okay, but you can't sleep with anybody for a year, and then you can give us blood. It's like, it's sort of, I don't know,
well,
it's very Catholic Church for me. But
isn't
yes,
that just an inducement?
It really is
like
an inducement.
I'd like to. I really am attracted to you, but
right.
I want to get blood.
Blood, so
no
sorry.
Way.
You know, there are plenty of gay men in monogamous relationships. And, you know, the other part of this is that there are so many heterosexuals out there who also engage in risky behavior and also get HIV and then AIDS, and they're not told not to give blood.
They're
and
not so banned for life.
They're not banned for life, and nobody's saying to them, oh, by the way, you can't have sex for a year before you can come back. You know, so there's some people are saying this is great because it ends an institutional discrimination that has been part of the blood
supply situation
for a very long time. It was a national policy of discrimination, but there are others, and myself included, who are saying, come on, blood can be tested now so much more easily for HIV than it was 30 years ago.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I need to be educated on this because I would presume that whether there's a fear of HIV being transmitted or any other disease being transmitted through blood, that the blood once given is tested before
yes.
it is then hand it off to someone
right.
else.
That's the way that works, right.
Right.
So that being the case, and apparently has always been the case, mm-hmm. then why should not gay men or women be allowed to give blood which is ultimately going to be tested before it is, in fact, transmitted to someone else.
Right. This is only about gay men.
Yeah, well, it's just, I didn't know, as Joe whispered, I didn't know this was a policy until I read the story, and I was shocked to see
And dating back to 1983, which I found shocking, which, I guess, I'm not excusing it, but I'm saying, okay, 1983, we didn't know, all right, but then, but then we did know, and not to do something for a long time is pretty amazing.
What's the state of the blood supply? Are we short of blood? Periodically, there are problems.
I think always around this time we are, usually in the, sometimes in the summer there are.
I don't understand the reason for the policy. It seems as dumb as you all have been saying. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I have a difficulty seeing this as a great civil right. I think I'd rather see, you know, gay marriage being something we embrace rather than, they have the right to give blood. We all have the right to give blood.
Yeah,
but never want to give it.
Each step is a step.
Yeah, but each step is a step. And, you know, giving blood is a badge of honor, you know. I mean, I used to give every 6 weeks.
We always say that giving the gift of life, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't get better than that.
I used to give all the time, and I can't give it all the time anymore. But I used to, and it was really a great feeling to be able to do that. And I think people, gay men, want to be able to give the gift of life. And why shouldn't they be able to? It's, you know, it was one of the it was an institutional homophobia that needed to be gotten rid of. And I think they need to take that next step and just say, enough already. You know, there are a lot of people at risk for HIV, and they're not being turned away. They're just focusing on gay men because that's where the AIDS epidemic started, and they continue to blame us for it.
So whether it be, because there's other issues here, of course, and as outlined, malaria, I mean, there's other things that...
I mean, we went to Costa Rica, and I couldn't give blood. I had to wait another year because it was, you know, maybe malaria, you know.
So before we move on, because there's a lot of other stories I want to get to, but it is, how long has the community been fighting this?
Since 1983.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because it in 1983 when they did this, it just further stigmatized gay men around HIV issues and made it even more difficult. And so gay men got blamed for anybody who got sick from a blood transfusion.
So I started with this question, so now I'll end with it, which is, so how did we get here now?
What do you mean?
Well, why change today in 2014?
Well, I think that a lot of people have been raising this issue for a long time. It's just time. I mean, you know, Rosemary said, gay marriage or same-sex marriage or marriage equality is going to be the law of the land in 2015. You look at the maps. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, Florida's going to go. They said no to the stay. So it's just time for us to normalize relations with the LGBT community.
To move into the other areas.
And move into other areas of real concern, you know, like the fact that there was another shooting outside of St. Louis this morning.
Right.
And, you know, the more important issues of the day and to really put our focus on healing the wounds of America, because that's really what we need to do.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We welcome your letters, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. It's your gift to us, your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our Christmas Eve edition of The Roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. Our panelists this morning, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post, and it's a delight to have you with us as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Just real quick on the letters, Gina writes, "Of course you can ride our bus. Would you mind sitting toward the back?" is her comment. And this really doesn't have anything to do with the price of tea, but I want to read it anyway because it's the slug on it is Christmas spirit. Just wanted to say that I volunteered at a few, this is from Ryan. Just wanted to say that I volunteered at a food donation center last night, and even though I know there are kids who live in poverty in the U.S., seeing two-year-olds coming up and coming in for dinner because they are either homeless or can't afford food or their electricity was shut off was absolutely devastating to me. It's hard to believe we live in a country as rich as ours, but we don't take care of our little children. So we'll share that with you as well during this holiday season. Let's go to some other issues. We're going to talk about some holiday stuff later on in the program, because now we have data that makes men not seem quite so bad.
I love this story.
We'll get to that in a moment. First of all, before we do that, though, if, depending on where you live, there's a possibility you live near a theater and you can see the interview.
Yay.
The list is out. If you go to, I believe Yahoo probably has the best section on where to find it in an area. I did not find a theater within our region.
No, Yonkers, I think, is
the
New York.
Closest, yeah. Yes. And there is one in Brattleboro, Vermont, yeah. Is playing it. But in the capital region and the environs, there is not.
Maybe the Spectrum will.
Well, I'm sure, you know, you can't imagine that they're not trying, you know, that everyone is probably trying to get the film. But it's, and this announcement was made about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the theater started coming on. It was a very quick thing. Yeah. So there are theaters being added all the time. I'm just wondering, okay, now, you know.
Well, I think they saw North Korea's internet go down, so why not show the movie?
I just think Sony mishandled this from the start, in understanding that they were under a direct attack, and, you know, I'm glad I wasn't in their shoes. But that said, they were on their heels from the beginning here. I cannot for the life of me understand why they didn't have in place in general a crisis management a team to address this. And in particular, they knew, because you could tell from some of the leaked emails, that they were concerned about this film many, many months ago. So that when it all unfolded, and when the email was hacked and all of these other threats were coming down, it seemed to me like they were flying from the seat of their pants from one day to the next. And even yesterday, them having already said, you're never going to see this movie, we're not going to release it, they say, now we're going to release it, and they're piecemeal releasing it. They blamed the theaters that didn't want to play the thing. It just looked like, to me anyway, it was botched from the very beginning by Sony.
I would have said that, except that I saw the president of Sony, Fareed Zakaria, on Sunday, and he actually was a very good spokesman for Sony. I just want to keep saying my own.
Well, where was he then?
And he said at one point, you know, Barack Obama had gone on air and said, I wish they had spoken to me. Well, in fact, Sony had been talking to senior White House officials. It never went to the president, but that wasn't Sony's fault. And they also talked about how they are not a distributor. They have never been a direct link to the American mm-hmm. people. They have to go through movie theaters, so that they always intended and were looking into ways to release the film, but yes, held it from that release.
But they then pointed the finger at the big movie chains that announced that they were not going to show it because they were fearful of this supposed attack. And whether or not they should have been fearful is something that can be discussed, but those were the major chains.
Correct.
Then you still did have this other 200 some odd theaters and others, such as the Spectrum, or was it the Madison in this town?
Mm-hmm. Well,
which are potentially
Images
theaters
or any
uptown. Upstate in my market. So that there were, when the big chains said they are not going to show it, Sony says, okay, we're not going to release it because the big chains won't show it. But why couldn't they then steer to the independent?
Well, I think that they were studying all of that. They also were studying the idea of direct streaming
video
it on the
demand.
Internet, putting it on YouTube. They were looking at, and why not?
I mean, and why wasn't that discussed weeks ago? Why was it going on in the crisis mode?
It's only been less than a week that we had the threat about this. That threat changed it. At first, it was just, hey, we're going to release all your naughty emails.
Right. And I think so. Why Sony was not on top of their game from a PR perspective is that they were doing internal Hollywood damage control.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Correct.
You know,
Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
Alex Trebek, for goodness sakes.
But this is a big company. They had to be able to chew gum and walk at the same time. Again, you can tell from the leak emails that they were concerned about it, that the very top of Sony in Japan had tried to get them to tone down the most violent scene at the end when Kim Jong-il is assassinated. There had to have been a white paper somewhere in Sony that said, here's how we're going to deal with it. I mean, you've got to be four steps ahead. Should they have anticipated a hack, rather? I think yes.
I think we're on a whole new territory here, where in the United States, artistic endeavor is protected in every way, legally. We give great license to artists. And now suddenly that we have to factor in an international terrorism attack, I think that's all
it's
new
a
ground.
New ball game.
All
agree.
New thing. Yeah. And I also was on this show. I talked about how Sony was to blame for having a system so apparently easily hackable. And again, the president of Sony on CNN said he has been led to believe that this was incredibly sophisticated, that their system was had been checked out and approved. They thought they were secure, and then there's this amazing attack.
There's always a way to come up with something.
Sure.
Just like your DVR that you have that you could watch this movie with, you can pause it. And we're going to pause right there because we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation.
You are so clever today.
We'll be right back. Roundtable at WMC.org. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post. And we're planning, we have good holiday cheer going on today.
Libby's making me laugh today.
That's great.
That's because I love you.
People don't know that.
That's right.
Listen, there's no pressure on Libby today. There's no pressure on me today. We're not running out to the stores,
right,
I don't think.
Yeah.
I have to go shopping the minute I leave here.
Now, Dateline Saugerties.
Yes.
Because we had said that as of my looking at the list last night, there was no movie theater in our area. Now, in comes the Orpheum Theater in Saugerties, and they will be playing The Interview at 7:30.
That night
at on
Christmas.
That is
Day.
It. Mm. So, as this this correspondent, Steve, says, no need to schlep to Yonkers.
And Saugerties is a wonderful place. It's got, I don't know how many restaurants and bars
great
will
restaurants.
Be open tomorrow, but it's a good place to be.
And it's got a great new library that I helped
excellent.
Put together.
Excellent.
All right. Well, so after you go see The Interview, you can go to the library.
Right,
I'm sure that's
closed.
The same audience.
Right. Well, you never know. As I said, Ira might go, Rosemary might go,
I'll go.
You're
going to
go, and you like libraries.
I do. All right.
So
there you go.
Yeah. And based on the advance reviews, do you think that after people start going and apparently filling up this theater, they're going to walk out, people are going to walk out of the theater just shaking their head? What the hell did we spend on?
Terrible
reviews. Can I ask this question? Did any of the Hangover movies get good reviews? No. Did Neighbors get a bad review?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
you know,
so in other words, that doesn't make them good movies. It just make them popularly
critical.
Successful.
Right.
Yeah.
They're commercially successful.
Yeah. Pineapple Express. Any of those films. Yeah. I mean, I don't think any of them are going to get great reviews. But if you go and you see them and they're funny and you laugh for 90 minutes and I don't know.
And all the studios want is commercial success.
There is one other business angle to the Sony thing to follow what we were talking about before, is that now, according to the Hollywood Press, the theater chains that originally told Sony they were not going to play this movie, they're now upset at the way Sony is finally decided to release the movie, not only to the independents, but also to go video on demand, because they're not going to get that revenue and their competitors are.
And the other thing that I thought, well, and to your point, I read a very similar article about that late last night, perhaps in Variety, where they were saying, the other thing is that it shows a system where there is another way of distributing a film. Mm-hmm. And if you do this, that now the theaters have, okay, well, if we're going to do something, we don't really need you guys. We can still go and release our
film. Yeah, but they're still not going to make, if in fact
absolutely.
The releases are only to the independents and video on demand, it's not going to produce anywhere near the kind of revenue that they would have gotten had it been released wide, as they say.
Because if they release it wide, one theater, one mega theater can show it on 7 screens.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to release it in Europe. I wonder if it's going to be shown.
Well, and I can't imagine that within a week, especially with it being shown, that it's not going to be illegally available everywhere.
Yeah.
So there's that too.
I think the answer to your question, it would be, it depends what happens once the movie is released. Is there going to be some lone idiot somewhere who will go into a theater and create problems?
Something stupid.
And in fact, will North Korea or some other rogue state do something that will make us say, oh, we shouldn't have released it. Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but...
I give up if James Franco was a part of some sort of terror plot.
Or James Flacco.
Yeah, not that he would be responsible.
But you know James Flacco.
Yes.
That's always what Obama called James Franco.
Yeah. Yeah,
he got his football player.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, yeah. There's that. Okay, so let's move on to other issues. Hey, the economy's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, gee, it was supposed to go down the tubes between Obamacare and everything else the president has done. We were supposed to be all in poverty, and look at that.
Yeah, it'll make it a little bit harder for the Republicans to be mean to him after January. And it also is a really interesting contrast with European countries who adapted the more Republican point of view of austerity and no cutbacks, no bailouts. And they are all in trouble. And the economic policies of the Obama administration appear to have borne fruit finally.
And the current statistics, which I see are through the third quarter, don't even take into account what is even more increasing in this quarter, which is the lowering in the price of gas and how much money that's going to be in people's pockets that they're going to spend and have spent on Christmas presents.
You notice, again, there's a lowering of personal debt, which was a big problem in 2008. I think that also will be helped by, if you're not spending money on gas, you're going to pay some bills.
And people are working.
With the stock market going up, the retirees' nest eggs are getting bitter.
Right.
So.
Two things. One is, in reading this article, I did think that this is a Washington Post article that is entitled "Robust Economic Growth in Third Quarter Raises Hopes That a Boom is on the Horizon." And you can have a good economy without always having a boom, right? I mean, it seems like it raises expectations that, okay, we had a good quarter, so now there's a boom coming.
Well, you're better off having slow and steady growth.
Right.
So that there's no balloon to burst. Track.
Right. And, you know, the issue is, okay, we're doing well. Well, what's the proposed deregulation of the banks going to mean? What's going to happen now on Wall Street? You know, are they going to go back to their old ways, or have they already gone back to their old ways? Is this just, you know, a panacea, and then those of us who do put into our 401ks are just going to get screwed because in 10 years everything's going to go bust again?
You know, in arguing with conservative friends the other day, we were, which, you know, is always fun. somebody said, well, you know, show me the growth. Show me the growth. And I said, well, you know what? I always make this comparison. I've done it for years. And it's because I live in a small village, in the village of Greenwich, and you can see there's one main street, and there's stores on that street. And during bad times, there's 5-10 storefronts that are empty, and they're just empty. And when you start to see the economy come back, slowly but surely, those storefronts get filled. Mm-hmm. The storefronts get filled, and there's something in them.
And are they there now?
And they're all there now. Uh-huh. I think with one or two exceptions, and
a little
with
economic
hopefully,
indicator,
you know, and Main I and, Street. And I think it is always indicative of now, and also, well before you start to see the very negative reactions and the very negative comments of, oh, you know, we're in a bust and things are going down the tubes. Well, you saw that maybe you'll see that 3 or 4 months prior where you start to see businesses shutter and close and not be able to. And there's a very immediate reaction to it. I mean, it's something like, I know it's harder in larger places, but I really do. I think if you look out, and certainly I would imagine you see this in Kingston, don't you?
Yeah, I think the only asterisk to the favorable talk about the economy and how that is filtering down to the public and they have more money to spend as a result of, for example, lower gas prices, is that wages continue to be stagnant, generally speaking.
True.
And so that...
and the job market is troubled.
Right, and so the... now, the impact on that on the street is now less because they're saving money somewhere else. But psychologically, when you get your paycheck every week and you still see that it's the same number that it's been for the last 6 or 7 years, literally, that will still make people think that the economy is not booming or not on the road to recovery.
Point.
And one more thing on the lower gas price. Oh, so nice. I was in Virginia Beach in the South this past week, and gas at one point was $2.15 a gallon.
Wow.
I felt like I had been catapulted into the past, and that really does make a difference. You fill up your car maybe
$45 instead of $60.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yes.
And, of course, in New York, it's still going to be 40 cents more
than that's hurtful. Yeah. As you go further up north, yeah. The prices edge up again. But wow.
Well, if you want to have fun, when you look at a movie that was made, say, even as recently as the mid-70s, and you'll see a street scene, and in the background there's a gas station, you know, $1.19
right.
or sometimes less. I just saw that in the Woody Allen Crimes and Misdemeanors movie.
Oh,
and
film.
It sort of jumps right out at you as the gas station is there.
Right. And now, as you say, you know, used to be as you can fill your car for 40 bucks as opposed to 60. So now you have money to go see the interview.
Well, you know, in my world, the bellwether of the economy is whether or not building referendums get passed.
Sure.
And after May of 2008, when we did pass one in Sorgatys, never been able to pass one since. But last year, slowly but surely, they've started to... People are starting to turn around from that perspective of, I can't fix my bathroom, why should I fix yours?
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're going to see more of those kinds of initiatives passing because people feel better about the economy and feel better about their community and recognize that they need to make the investments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm still old enough to remember when I first started driving, when you wanted to get gas, a dollar bill would be enough to get you a few gallons.
Get you going,
I remember.
Well, it does show you how much we accommodate gas into our lifestyle. I mean, you pay
you
for
have
it.
To.
Right. You just pay that price. Yeah. And so now it feels like this great cushion of extra money that it's free.
And there was a great commercial when we were younger of when a couple was getting gas. And they said, like, a dollar. And the guy who was pumping was able to clean their windshield.
That's right.
Yes.
Check the tire pressure. And the dollar filled up the tank.
Yeah.
You know, it was really a different time.
As you said, it's not just a few pennies. You can save 15 or 20 bucks a fill up now.
Yeah.
That's not chump change.
That's amazing.
And I was just in England, and we were driving with we had a driver was bringing us around, and the guy Dave said, so how much is gas in the States? And I said, well, when we left, it was around like $2.75, and he said, I hate you.
Europe is much more.
But that's the money going into their, you know, and then when you start finding out where a lot of that money goes, I mean, I'm not justifying, but when you see where a lot of that money goes, where it's part of their, it goes to the highway maintenance, it goes to, you know, a lot of it. Absolutely. I understand what you're saying. But by the same token, you know, it is a bit of an apples and oranges comparison.
In Tunisia, there's the infrastructure sort of falling apart after a revolution 2 years ago. And so everywhere you go, there are these stands by the side of the road, and they're like a little jug with hoses. And people stop there, and it's bootleg gasoline from Libya and Algeria, and it's so cheap. But, of course, there's nothing siphoned off for the state, and that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get culture shock anyway when you go to England because the system is different.
Yeah.
So you're looking at $9 or whatever, or even in Canada where it might be $4 here and it's $6 or whatever the number is.
By the way, that's a good point, Ira. Happy Boxing Day.
Oh.
Isn't that the day after?
It is the day after Christmas, 26th, but we won't
be on
there.
Muhammad Ali's picture is on.
Oh, okay.
He's not doing well
He has
days.
Pneumonia, and they say it's a mild case, so he should be all right.
That's
but
good.
He's not doing well for quite some time.
And the first President Bush also.
He's been hospitalized. So. I just want to real quick get to three letters, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll talk about holiday shopping. We'll leave it there before we let British people sing holiday tunes to us. Luca writes, don't you think that the Republican destruction of the unions might have something to do with today's stagnant wages? Bonnie writes in and says, defending art, no matter how lowbrow, is the price of free speech. This controversy would have been a non-issue and easier to defend were this a Merchant Ivory production. And Steven says, sadly, Sony and theaters were more worried about American warriors than North Koreans. It's always about risk assessment. And that is those are just a few of the letters that we received. We welcome yours. Roundtable at WAMC.org. The panel will be back after the short break. Christmas time is here, and a new poll reveals the cards and gifts that are part of celebrating the holiday are ubiquitous, even among those who don't share the Christian beliefs behind the story of the Magi who gave the first Christmas gifts. According to the Associated Press poll, 77% of Americans plan to exchange gifts this holiday season. 48% will send greeting cards. and the gift-giving set includes about 8 in 10 Christians and 73% of those who say they have no religious beliefs. Greeting cards also cross denominational lines. To me, the greeting card thing is weird because, you know, so many do e-messages and Facebook and different things. Whatever. So, and they have a whole thing here in the panel about the photo card generation, yeah, that Americans tend to send cards that have their families on them, which I like. I love those because you get to see how big the kids have gotten in a year, and it's always scary and it makes you feel old. And then there's also a poll that I want to get to, which says that men don't always wait till the last minute to shop. That is, it's iconic as Santa Claus. Still visions of him dance in our heads every holiday season, the harried husband boyfriend desperately scrambling through the mall for last minute gifts. Men's magazines offer seasonal guides to help ease this frantic pain. Boutiques host men's nights leading up to the holidays. But according to a holiday gifting poll on how Americans shop for their significant others, the male last minute shopper is largely a myth. The poll of more than 3,000 consumers show that, contrary to stubborn stereotypes, just as many women shop at the last minute, and overall, procrastinating shoppers make up a tiny percentage of all gift-getters, 4% of men, 3% of women, and it shows that 75% of men buy gifts for their significant others during November or the first 2 weeks in December.
Are you done, Joe?
I am go.
You're a go?
I thought you were saying, are you done with your propaganda rant there, Mr. Donahue?
No, are you done shopping?
Yes.
And when did you finish?
I finished, like, I don't know, I think like most of us, I don't know what you count as being finished. Like this morning I stopped and I bought Hershey Kisses to put in the candy bowl. Like, is that, does that count?
Well, no, I'm talking
okay
about
the big presents.
Yeah,
the big significant
that stuff's
present
been done for weeks. Okay. Yeah.
My mother is a champion. She typically is finished, and she shopped for billions of us in March, and the presents are wrapped and hidden by April. So that's the by that measure, we are all slackers.
The question is, does she remember what she gave people?
No, she does not. She sometimes buys extra presents, which we all like for that. But my sons, I have three sons, and they never procrastinate. They were always amazingly thoughtful, not to me, but to girlfriends and each other. To me, I don't get anything. But yeah, to the sons. That's okay. It's all right. I love them anyway. But they always put thoughts into it. And I always ask the question, what did you get? And I'll ask about their significant other, because there is thought and ideas. And I love that.
I can't offer any personal insight here because this is not my holiday. But I suspect that I know I'm a very anal person. I suspect that I would be finished with my Christmas shopping in September.
Well, let's say if you were shopping for your wife's birthday, would you wait until the day before or would you do it a few weeks
I've
before?
I've been known to do that, but mainly because when I was working, I didn't always I lost track of days, and I would look at the calendar and I say, oh, wait a minute, it's tomorrow.
We are all deadline people. I do my best work under time pressure.
Well, I
buy
fantastic
things on Christmas
I agree with that.
I'm going out today.
I just find it's hard for me to relate. We have, among our friends, we ran into one in the store yesterday, and she's having her family and, you know, her kids, her grandkids are in, you know, the spouses, 19 people to her house.
Right.
All of whom she has to buy Christmas gifts. I have another dear friend on Long Island, almost as large, if not larger. And the thought comes to me is, where does she find the time and where does she find the money to spend on all of these presents?
You know, that's a good point, Ira. That's one more reason that poll seemed real to me. Like, men don't buy for as many people as the women. It's the mother
that's
who
true
gets all the kids and grandma and the
absolutely
in-laws. And the husband gets the spouse and maybe one or two others.
Well,
but that's it.
I'm certain that if I had the need to do a lot of Christmas shopping, I would go online. I just think, I hate to say that because we want to support our local merchants.
I don't. I tried it this year. I did a lot of shopping in stores, and every place I went, they didn't have what I want. They had rude clerks or clueless clerks, and they would say, well, you could look for it online. went. So, yeah, I did. And then I went home, went on Amazon.com, and bought like 14 presents in an hour, made great deals. Sorry.
Now, see, I made it a goal that I was going to buy everything in town, and I did.
In your little community.
And nothing
where
is going to be.
The storefronts are now full.
And nothing
Joe is keeping the economy afloat.
Nothing that I got, with very few exceptions, did not come from the town. And what was shocking to me was that if you do it and you plan it, you can do it. They'll get it for you. And again,
you don't have to. You go online. You say, this is what I want. They give you six different choices. They're all very cheap, much cheaper than the store, and they deliver on time.
I agree with you. I understand the concept, of course, but I do have to say, like, for example, I was looking for a frame for a CD frame where you put like the little book from the CD and you put it in a frame. Well, I couldn't find that, and I couldn't order it anywhere, so I did have to order that online. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it came, and that was fine. All was good. But for all the reasons that we were talking about before, about the economy and Main Street and those stores being open, that, you know, that's what you got to...
I don't know.
You got to support them.
I hear you, and yet for ease and to get what you want, I think the better way is online. I really do think it's going to... Brick and mortar, old fashioned.
Now, I understand, like, brick and mortar, like, if you're talking about, like, are we comparing Home Depot with Bob's Hardware Store?
Yeah. Okay. I need a fireplace tools. Where do you go? You go to Crossgate Malls. Where do you go?
Okay. Now, see,
if I go to Google and write fireplace tools buy, and
if I go to Bob's hardware store in town, and I say this is what I'm looking for, and he said, well, I can get it on Tuesday, and then okay, and half the time I'm telling you they'll bring it up to the house and drop it off.
Okay, that's sweet. Of course, Tuesday you miss Christmas, but
you're also, you know, living in a small town.
Well, that's
where
right.
Well,
that's what I'm
that
saying. But
sense.
I'm saying that it still exists and it can exist if people let it.
This
exist.
Is like railroad engineers who wanted to keep railroads going when there was a better way.
Or newspaper editors.
Well, that's that print will be with us forever.
Yeah, you know, I really do believe in supporting local merchants for all the obvious reasons. But I, every time I hear a business complaining about the incursion of internet, whether it's shopping or whatever else, and I sort of just say, welcome to my world. I mean, this is what we unfortunately, when you talk about that subject, newspapers are typically the ones that are targeted as the ones that are being impacted more so than anybody else, and that is not the case. It's across the board.
Well, right.
So we were talking about digital movies on demand hurting movie theaters. We're talking about Amazon hurting shopping, bookstores, newspapers. There are any number of different examples.
Mm-hmm. Libby, you were rolling your eyes. Did you want to say something?
No, because, you know, I don't shop.
So you're not going to drop because you don't shop?
And when I do, it's very directed. I go, I buy, I leave. I don't meander. I don't hang out.
So you're not a browser.
No, I go in, I buy what I need to buy, and I leave. And Lynn did all the holiday shopping, to be perfectly honest.
Is it an insult if I say to you that if you were buying presents for me, that I would find that comforting?
What, that Lynn? No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Okay. You're absolutely right. She has much better taste than
well,
I do.
Well, she just seems...
She knows how to do the holiday.
Very style
yes,
thing,
and
sure.
And wrapping is beyond compare.
Perfect.
So, yes.
We are going to go over and hear the special, Nine Lessons in Carols. This has been going on the BBC since the 20s, and we've been airing it for decades, and it's an honor to air it again. Thank you all very much.
Merry
Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Right. Thank you. We'll be back on the roundtable on Monday. Thank you.